We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith with Steve Shoemaker. I apologize for any difficulty listeners have had today because of the extreme weather conditions. I will let people know that as soon as we have information to share with you, we will do that. Jeff Bossert will be coming on the air as needed to give periodic weather updates. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Dan Keeding. That's spelled K-E-D-I-N-G. D as in David. We'll put Dan, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
And let me say very quickly that if there are interruptions in the program and you miss part of the stories that Dan is going to be telling today, he's a very well-known storyteller and author and folk musician. But remember, you can always hear the archive program at your convenience on your computer at will.illinois.edu. But we'll do our best to let people hear today live on this program some of the stories that Dan has for us. He is an award-winning storyteller. He's won the Circle of Excellence Award from the National Storytelling Network, and one of his recordings for children received an award from the American Library Association. So, Dan, congratulations on those.
Thank you.
So kind of you to join us here live in the studio on this horrible stormy day.
It makes it more exciting.
Well, it does. Let's start with a short. Do you have a short story for us in case we have an interruption?
I'll do a little story for you that I really enjoy it because I think it's just one of those stories that makes me feel good. Once there was a group of people and they lived in a valley, and this valley was very poor. The water was bracken and you could barely drink it. The soil was depleted. You could barely grow anything. They were always hungry, always thirsty, and the children always cried. Now they knew that on the other side of the mountains, through the mountain pass, they would come upon a beautiful valley with clean river, fruit trees, enough land for everyone. But every time they tried to cross, they met the beast, an enormous creature that appeared like a thundercloud. And it would throw curses at them and thunder and lightning and scream at them and would drive them back to their poor valley. But one day there was a little girl, and this little girl was walking up the mountain path. And as she did, she heard the sound of thunder, but she kept walking. And then she heard the sound of curses, but she kept walking. And she turned the bend in the path, and there was the thundercloud, lightning flashing. But she walked right towards it, and something happened. The closer she got, the smaller it became, till finally it shrank down to the size of a small black pebble, and it fell at her feet. The little girl picked it up and put it in the palm of her hand, and she said, "What are you?" And a tiny voice came out of the pebble, and the voice said, "Me? I am fear." And the girl started to laugh, and she took the pebble and threw it off the side of the mountain. And she said, "Not anymore." And she led her people across the mountain to a new life.
A story by Dan Keeding. Mm. Dan, is that a story that you recorded that people could hear?
I haven't recorded it yet.
Okay.
But it's an old traditional story found in many cultures. And this idea of struggle and the innocence of a child overcoming what people are struggling against is pretty common.
Now, people who do want to hear recordings you've made, you have both DVDs and CDs, mm-hmm. and you have books of your stories and traditional stories. They can go to your website.
They can go to my website, and they can hear stories and songs.
That's dankeeding.com. And again, Keeding is K-E-D-I-N-G. D in the middle, like Dan, Daniel. Tell the listeners the titles you've chosen for some of your collections of stories, because it's so appropriate for this program, Keeping the Faith.
Well, the latest one was called Wisdom and Wayfaring, and that's folk tales and songs from all over the world. Promises Kept and Promises Broken, stories that deal with that topic. In a Dead Man's Company, ghost stories and dark tales. Rudy and the Roller Skate, that was a children's CD. Strawberries in Winter, another CD of stories. And the other CD would be, The Gypsy Wagon. And that's true stories of growing up in Chicago. And then my books are Stories of Hope and Spirit, English Folk Tales, and Elder Tales, which are stories about elders from all over the world. And I have a 2 new volume set that should be out in August. And that's called The United States of Storytelling, Volumes 1 and 2, East and West of the Mississippi. Uh-huh. And they're folk tales and true stories from each state.
And when you pick a title, like just to pick one at random, Stories of Hope and Spirit, mm-hmm. do you have that concept in mind first and then go searching for stories, or those stories just sort of produce that title?
The stories usually produce the title for my CDs and my books. I put the stories together, and they almost always become thematic in some way. And I like stories that have, I hate to say the word moral to it, but I like them to have a message to it, like the one I just told. I think it's important. I think that's what storytelling has always been about. It's not just about imparting knowledge to people. It's also about imparting mores and lessons to people. And I think that people forget that. You know, when you look back through world religions, storytelling is an enormous part of it, yes. An enormous part of each religion. And I think storytellers, most of them are very well aware of that fact.
Now, when you were a child, you enjoyed stories, I'm sure, but you probably didn't think, I'm going to become a storyteller professionally.
Oh, no.
How did it happen?
Well, as a child, my grandmother lived with us. She came from Croatia, Yugoslavia, in 1920, and we spoke Croatian a lot at home. And my grandmother taught me stories that she had learned in her village, and many of them had been handed down in the family for 10, 12 or more generations. So I knew stories, but I got enamored with folk music when I was in college and started to perform and play. It was Chicago. And Chicago back then was the mecca for folk music.
Oh, yes.
And so I was in a folk band, first a trio, then a duet. And one day I decided, wouldn't it be nice to tell a story on stage? Huh. And I did. And the audience seemed to like it. And when that group broke up, instead of being a folk singer that told stories, I became a storyteller who sang folk songs.
Ah.
And I stayed a soloist and concentrated on my storytelling.
Now, you have a biography that you have as part of your website, which I enjoyed reading, and I was intrigued by the stories from Croatia. Since that beginning, you've expanded to learn stories from all mm-hmm. many different cultures. Has that been systematic, or has that just happened?
I would like to say it was systematic. My goal was to learn one story at least from every country in the world.
Wow.
But the problem is I get to a country and I start delving into their folklore and I get stuck.
Sure.
So when I finally leave that country, I've left not with one, but with 15 or 20 stories. So I haven't reached my goal of learning one from every country yet, but it started out as systematic. And I remember the first story I learned. I wanted to get, you know, as far away from the United States as possible, because I knew if I announced this to a group of children that they would start looking on maps and globes to find weird countries.
Uh-huh.
So I started in learning stories from places like Turkmenistan and places like this, uh-huh. because I knew the kids would pick that out. And they did.
Fun.
Yeah.
We're having a little bit of a break in the weather announcements, so why don't we risk a slightly longer story?
That sounds great. I'll tell you one that my grandmother told me. And she would make me tell her the stories over and over again until I had them down. Normally in our family, the stories went from mother to daughter or grandmother to granddaughter, but I was the only grandchild for a long time in America, so grandmother panicked and started teaching me. But this is a story I used to love. One day there was a farmer, and he had the worst luck of any man in the world. No matter what he tried, he failed. Sometimes there was a drought, and his crops burned up. Sometimes, like today, there was a flood, and the seeds flowed away. One year, the house burned down. Next year, the barn burned down. One year, the wife was sick. Next year, the children were sick. One year, the hens stopped laying eggs. Next year, the cows stopped giving milk. The fruit trees got a blight. The vegetable garden wouldn't grow. And finally, one year, he made some money, and the king raised his taxes. And so he was walking along the edge of his field. He sat down on a stump, and he was saying to himself, "Oh, Boże, oh, God, why me?" When suddenly a creature jumped out of the woods. It was tall and gangly, with long arms and legs, dressed in black. Its hair was long, matted and dirty, with creatures running in and out of it. He had a long beard and a long mustache, and a long green streak that went through his mustache and beard that corresponded with his nostrils. He had long fingernails that were blackened and ragged, and the body odor was horrible. And the man said, "What are you?" And the creature stopped his dance, bowed, and said, "I am your bad luck." And the man said, "My what?" "I'm your bad luck. It's because of me everything bad happens to you. I just showed up to make sure you were as miserable as possible." And the man said, "I don't understand." The creature said, "Do you remember when the house burned down? That was me. The droughts, I took care of that. I take care of everything that brings you misery." Well, the farmer was so upset that he jumped up, took his fist and hit the creature, knocked him out, took off his belt and tied him up. He ran back to his barn, brought a shovel, and dug a deep pit, muttering to himself the whole time. He threw the creature in the bottom of the pit, filled it up, put some rocks on top, jumped up and down, and you know, he felt really good. And when he got home, he'd only been in the door a minute, when the neighbor walked over. He handed him an envelope and said, "My boys were burning the trash, and I saw this just as they were about to throw it in. It's addressed to you, but it came to our house." And when the farmer opened it, it was a letter telling him that his great uncle had died and left him a fortune. The next day, he won the lottery. And he didn't even buy a ticket. From then on, his luck changed. His crops were the thickest and fullest. His hens gave 2 eggs a day. The cows gave the sweetest milk. And so it was that in 2 weeks he became the richest man in the county. And everyone was glad for him because, let's face it, when someone's been down a long time and their luck changes, we're happy because it could happen to us next. Except for one man. He used to be the richest man in the county. And one day he visited the farmer and he said, "My friend, I've come over to congratulate you about your good luck. Tell me your secret." Well, the farmer didn't want to tell him. He didn't think he'd believe him. So he said, "Perseverance." "Oh, no, that won't work. Perseverance, you could never persevere to make this farm work. A hard work? No, no. Tell me the truth." And finally the farmer said, "If you promise not to tell anyone." "Oh, I do. I found my bad luck." "Your what?" "My bad luck. It's a creature. You see that pile of stones over there near the edge of the forest? I buried him underneath that pile. And from the moment I buried him till now, my luck has changed." And the rich man said, "How interesting." And so, that night when everyone was asleep, the rich man crossed the field with a shovel over his shoulder. He moved aside the rocks and he dug deep down into the earth. He found the creature and pulled him up. He untied his hands, and he said, "My friend, go back to your master. Make his life horrible. Make his life miserable. Make him poor again." And the creature said, "No, I'm not going to go back to him. He hit me. Look, I have a lump on my head. He tied me up. He threw me in the bottom of a pit. Do you know how hard it is to hold your breath for 2 weeks? I'm never going back to that man. But you saved my life. You're wonderful. I'm going to stay with you forever." And you know, he did. And that's how a rich man became poor overnight.
A story told by Dan Keating. You can find more of his work at dankeating.com and in your local bookstores and, of course, online. Every place's books and CDs and DVDs are sold. K-E-D-I-N-G. Now, Dan, you learned that story. You were telling this from your Croatian grandmother, and she made you repeat it so you'd get it right. But mm-hmm. But over the years, have you added things? Like, were there really lotteries?
No, I added that when the lottery came in. I thought it was a nice touch. I firmly believe that we have to stay within a traditional context, but we really have to make the old stories alive for today's audiences. And so I put little touches like that in to make sure that people can still relate to them.
Now, you tell stories live, not only on the radio, but in performance. How do people contact you and hear about you and book you?
Storytelling is very much an art form that's by word of mouth.
Uh-huh.
But I've been doing it so long now that, you know, I play all the major festivals and things like that. And so it's great fun. And so people find me and they bring me to their festivals, to their towns.
Now, you're particularly popular with children, I know, schools and libraries love to have you come and read and tell stories to children. But one of your recent books is Elder Tales.
Mm-hmm.
And have you found with that increased interest from nursing homes and places
mm-hmm.
where old
of course.
People stay and live?
I think that oftentimes we forget the wealth of knowledge and stories and wisdom that in senior centers and nursing homes and retirement homes. And so that was what the book was all about, a celebration. And not just the wisdom, but the courage. There are many stories. You know, most of us, especially in movies, they only take the Beowulf story for the first half when he's young. But the second half of Beowulf, he's 80, and he goes off to fight a dragon to save his people. That's a very heroic thing for someone who's 80 to go off and fight a dragon. And we forget these stories, and we forget how courageous people can be in their later years. And especially in the Asian countries, China and Japan, you have a lot of stories about sword gods. Well, that was their nickname. And they could, you know, we see the movies like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, things like that. But there are stories about these men who could fly from rooftops and vanquish armies with their single sword. And they were all older. They weren't young men. They had attained wisdom and they had attained expertise. They had taken their art to a spiritual level.
Let me give listeners a chance to join our conversation and to ask questions or make comments with our guest today, Dan Keating. Listeners in the Champaign-Urbana area may punch in 333-9455. If you're listening long distance, including on the internet, you may call us 1-800-222-9455, and that's a toll-free number. Let me give those again, 333-WILL for local listeners, long distance, 1-800-222-WILL or 9455. Dan, you have one book with you, the one I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Stories of Hope and Spirit. How do you decide when to read a story and when to tell it from memory?
Oh, well, I never read them.
You never read them?
Never read them, no.
You always memorize?
Well, they're really not even memorized. I know them. If you memorize a story and you get interrupted or you forget a word, you're lost. So I know the stories so that I can literally change them on the fly while I'm speaking.
And do you change them partly in response to how the audience seems to be responding?
Exactly. So if the audience is laughing more, then I'll make the story more humorous. If it's a scary story and they look too scared, I'll pull back on it. So I'm very cognizant of how my audience is reacting to me when I'm on stage. And I try and always tell my students and my, you know, the people that come to me for workshops and lessons and storytelling, you have to be aware of your audience. They're the most important thing when you're on stage.
We have a listener or a couple listeners waiting to ask a question or make a comment. Let's go to a caller from Rantoul on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi, I enjoyed your story, and I enjoy stories in general. But, you know, as a little kid, I heard an awful lot of stories that always had a twist about the foolish person that made a foolish wish. How come it's so stylistically impossible to have someone who gets to make a wish to have a million wishes? I mean, it feels like a cheat when somebody always ends up being hurt by his foolish wish. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's a very good question. Oftentimes they make that foolish wish. The classic one is the husband who gets the three wishes, and he wishes that he had a sausage. And the wife comes along and says, "What an idiot you are. You have all these wishes, and you wished for a sausage. I wish that sausage was attached to your nose," at which time it is. And their third wish has to be getting rid of the sausage. And so the caller's right. We have a lot of those. But there's a wonderful story from Ireland where he gets past that. The man's so clever that when he gets one wish, he's able to get three wishes from his one wish. I'll tell it later, but it's a nice little story from Ireland. So, but yes, those stories are mostly to get people to understand that, you know, you have to accept your fate. A wish isn't going to make your life better. You're going to make your life better. And so that's what these stories are all about.
We have another caller waiting on line number two from Champaign. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just curious about, let's see if, something I thought about, let's see if you can define it for me. I've done a lot of one-person show performing where I do monologues and things like that. I've done a little bit of storytelling. And to me, it feels like they're very different, even though they're both a form of acting, I suppose, or I don't know what it is that feels very different about it to me. And I find storytelling not as comfortable to me as doing, for example, monologues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you'd have any insights into, maybe this is just all in my head, or if there really is some very definable difference between those two arts.
Yes, there is. When you do monologues, when you're doing one-person shows, basically you're an actor, and you're in a script, and or you're doing a scripted material, and you're in a character. When you're storytelling, you're usually in the third person. The story is always a third person. And so the storyteller is building a relationship with the audience. I'm giving them words, but the audience is seeing the image in their heads. You see, so we're creating the story together. But when you're acting, the audience is watching you, and they're really not creating with you. What they're doing is listening to you, and you've got a scripted show. You might be wearing a costume. So a lot of the work of imagination is already done for them with your costume and with props and things like that. So that's what the big difference is. When you tell stories, you're not using those things. You're just getting up and telling. So you create a more intimate relationship with the audience. I hope that helps a little bit.
No, that's interesting, because the kind of performances I do, I don't use any costumes or props.
Oh, okay.
Clumsy, I'll just drop everything. Mm-hmm. So I just go straight, just me and the words, and that's it. But that does give me some insight as to why it feels very different, and that if I really wanted to get better at storytelling, what I would have to do. So thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you for the call. Wow. Appreciate it. Other callers, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana area. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. Our guest today is Dan Keating, K-E-D-I-N-G, who is an author and folk musician and a longtime storyteller. Dan, you mentioned this story of one wish for three wishes. Would you like to tell that one?
And we'll dedicate this to our first caller.
Sure.
And I got this story from my good friend Liz Weir. Liz is a wonderful storyteller from Northern Ireland. And I see her whenever I get over there. A long time ago, there was a young man named Connor, and he lived with his wife and his mother and his father. And Connor was a very, very happy man. He woke up every day with a smile on his face. But the three people he lived with, well, they complained all the time. His father complained because they were poor, his wife complained because they had no children, and, well, his mother complained because she had gone blind and she wanted to see again. But Connor never complained. And one day he went hunting, trying to get meat to smoke to put up for the winter. And as he went hunting, he came to a glen. And on the other side of the glen, he saw an enormous stag with a rack of antlers that would make the king of Ireland jealous because his crown was so paltry next to that rack of antlers. He took out an arrow, he notched it, and he was just about to let go when the deer turned and spoke. "Don't shoot me, Connor." Well, Connor lowered his bow and arrow, as you would too. And the deer walked over and said, Since you spared my life, Connor, I'll grant you one wish, but it's only one, and no asking for more wishes, just one wish. Now, Connor was an intelligent young man. He said, can I have some time to think about it? And the great stag looked at him and said, I'll be here tomorrow morning. Let's meet, and you can tell me your wish. And so it was that the great stag bounded off. And Connor went home. Now, the first person he met was his father, and he told him about the one wish. And his father said, oh, Connor, wish for gold. If we had gold, we'd be rich and we'd be happy. Wish for gold. And Connor thought, that's a good wish. And he met his mother sunning herself outside the cottage. And she said, oh, Connor, wish for my sight so I could see the stars at night and the flowers in the spring. And he thought, that's a good wish. And then he told his wife as she cooked the evening meal. And she said, oh, Connor, could you wish for a child? And he said, that's a good wish. And that night he tossed and turned, till just before dawn he woke up with a big smile on his face. He dressed and he ran to that glen, and he waited. And soon the great stag came into the clearing. And the stag looked at him and said, Connor, do you have a wish for me? I do. What is it? I wish that my mother could see my firstborn child lying in a cradle of gold. And if deer could smile, the great stag would have smiled. And he said, Connor, it's the finest wish that I will ever grant. And you know, it all came true.
A story from Ireland, told by Dan Keating. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. We'll be going soon for a weather check, a weather update. But in the meantime, let me tell listeners who will be on this program in the days ahead. Next week, on June 20th, our guest will be from the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. Melikan Tenuri and at least one other person from that Muslim group will be our guest, talking about some of the activities and programs of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation here at the University of Illinois. Don Nolan will be our guest host on June 27th, and these are some of the things coming up in the next week or two. Dan, while we're waiting for the latest weather update, there is new information coming over literally as I'm speaking here from the Weather Service. Did you ever have any training to be a storyteller other than family training?
I took a few workshops like anyone else in the beginning, but no, it's all from my boyhood. Which is odd because now I teach a class here, you know, at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science.
At the university level, yes.
Right. I'm teaching a class on how to be a storyteller, for storytelling. It's been wonderful. I love the students, and it's I learned so much from them. But I never took any training like that. I tell in a very traditional style. You can tell that I learned it traditionally.
We're now ready to hear the latest update on the weather from Jeff Bossard.
And thank you, Steve. This is Jeff Bossert with a severe weather update. The most recent one to pass along is the National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for northwestern Christian County, west central Macon County, and Sangamon County. That's in effect until 6:30. At 5:21, meteorologists detected a line of severe thunderstorms capable of producing quarter-sized hail, damaging winds, and these storms were located on the line extending 5 miles south of Athens to Waverly and moving east at 35 miles an hour. Locations that would be impacted include Springfield, Taylorville, Sherman, Chatham, Auburn, Riverton, Divernon, Rochester, Pawnee, Mechanicsburg, and several of the small towns around in and around Sangamon County. Again, a severe thunderstorm warning in effect for northwestern Christian County, west central Macon County, and Sangamon County until 6:30 tonight. Also, a flash flood warning has been issued for Edgar County. That's in effect until 11 tonight. The Weather Service Doppler radar indicated slow-moving thunderstorms just before 5 with very heavy rainfall across the warned area. An inch and a half to 2 inches of rain has fallen over that area. Towns will be impacted, include that they could experience some flooding, include Paris, Chrisman, Kansas, Redmond, and Vermilion. also a significant weather alert is what's being also issued for southern Edgar County. That's in effect until 5:45 with the National Weather Service radar. I was tracking a strong thunderstorm near Redmond with penny-sized hail, and the alert here indicates that Edgar County residents, especially cities like Kansas, Redmond, Paris, and Vermilion, should monitor the situation closely, looking for possible warnings. And the watch remains in effect. Severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect until 7 this evening. Four counties, including Champaign, Coles, Edgar, Vermilion, Douglas, Christian, Shelby, DeWitt, McLean, Piatt, Logan, Menard, and Sangamon counties. Stay tuned to WILL AM and FM for further watches and warnings. 71 degrees at 5:30.
Information here at WILL in Urbana-Champaign, AM 580, a service of the Department of Media here at the University of Illinois. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Dan Keating. This is a live show here on the 13th of June, a day of exciting weather, but also of some very exciting stories. Dan, you were just mentioning you teach a course at the graduate level in the university here at the College of, what is it?
Library and Information Science.
Library and Information Sciences. I have to always stop and think of the various new names of the departments. But how do you get the students to find stories? Do you give them to them and say, learn this? Or do you say, find them on your own, talk to your family, do research in the library?
Exactly. I never tell them what to tell. During the semester, they have to tell three stories in class and usually one or two outside class, to children, to a senior center, at one of the public libraries. So they have to tell a lot.
And where do they tend to go?
It's really odd. In the beginning, they all tend, because I stress they learn at least one or two traditional stories, because traditional stories give them a good background and a really good example of how a good story is structured. But very often, for their last story, a majority of each class tend to start telling personal stories about themselves, about their families.
Uh-huh.
And it's really wonderful to see the difference in them telling a folktale versus telling a personal story. While they might be more stilted, a little bit more hesitant telling a folktale, when they tell a personal story about their family, they become alive.
Oh, really?
Oh, and it's just wonderful to watch. You know, I've had kids tell stories about how their parents met, how their grandparents met, animal stories about dogs and cats, and wonderful stories. And it's just great to watch how alive they become, how vibrant the story is, because it's something they know. You know?
You mentioned earlier that in many different religious traditions around the world, storytelling is very important. I was reading just today an article in the current American Scholar by Christian Wiman, who is the editor of Poetry Magazine, but he's also a writer himself, and he's written a couple articles for American Scholar. The one from, I think, last year or the year before, won a major award for spiritual writing. Mm. And in this one, he mentions the fact that the stories that Jesus told, parables, Jesus often gave an explanation of them right afterwards to his mm-hmm. disciples, because they'd ask questions. Now, what did that parable mean? And Wiman points out in this American Scholar article that he thinks often Jesus was showing his sense of humor, because the explanation often didn't explain very much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you ever explain stories when kids or other people say, what did that really mean? You know,
what? Kids will ask. They'll ask me that. Adults will never ask it publicly. They'll come up to me after the show.
Uh-huh.
But children will raise their hand,
yeah,
and they'll say, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, or the big question is that true?
Uh-huh.
I'll tell a story about dragons, and they'll go, is that true?
Yeah.
And they want to know. I try not to explain the stories, because I think that in some ways it takes a little bit of their power away if I'm telling everyone how to think about it.
Uh-huh.
So I have a tendency not to do that. But I feel the same way as he does. I think that there is a little bit of sense of humor there. And in some ways, I actually think that maybe some of those explanations were put in afterwards by the apostles or disciples because they didn't trust that the people they were writing for really could understand it. But I think that those are wonderful examples of how important storytelling is on a religious basis. The Zen stories found in Japan, same thing. You know, the more humorous stories, let's say, of wise fools like Nasruddin among the Muslim people. You have that. Those stories are very, very popular. And wherever the Muslim people have settled or where the Ottoman Turkish Empire has been, you'll find these stories. And, you know, Nasruddin is this wise fool.
Could you tell us one?
Sure, I'd love to. I personally love Nasruddin's stories. I think they're just great. One day, Nasruddin is sitting in the coffee house, and a young man comes up to him and says, "Mullah, I'm getting married soon. May I have your blessing?" Nasruddin says, "Yes, of course. That's a wonderful thing. I think marriage is a wonderful, sacred thing." And the man looked at him, and the young man said, "Well, Mullah, if you think marriage is so wonderful, why have you never married?" And Nasruddin said, "I wanted to marry. When I was your age, I went looking for the perfect wife. I went to Isfahan, where I met a woman of grace, but we had nothing to talk about. I went to Baghdad. I met a woman where we could talk, but she had little grace. But finally, in Cairo, I met her. A woman of grace, of beauty. We could talk all night about philosophy, theology, politics, history." The young man said, "Nasruddin, why didn't you marry her?" "Oh, unfortunately for me," said Nasruddin, "she was looking for the perfect husband." There's always that little element of truth, of wisdom inside the Nasruddin stories. And I just love those stories because of it. They catch you off guard because you laugh, and then all of a sudden later on you go, "Oh, yeah, well, there is that."
Let me give the phone numbers again. This is a live program here on WILL AM 580, Keeping the Faith on Sunday nights from 5 to 6 Central Time. If you'd like to ask our guest, Dan Keating, a question or a comment, do give us a call. Anywhere the program is heard, you may use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, you may punch in 333-9455, and that'll get you on the line with our technical director, Kyle Kroha, and she'll put you in line to be here talking with our guest. Then these Muslim stories that have that twist at the end. This one you just gave, I was thinking as you began it, well, here's a story told from a very masculine point of view. I wonder what the feminist influence has had on storytelling, and then at the end, of course, it has a very good feminist twist. But have storytellers been more women? Like in your family, you said it tended to be from mother to daughter to granddaughter, or male, or do you know that history?
It depends on the culture.
Okay.
In many cultures, it was more in the female line, others in the male. I know that nowadays on a professional level, I would say that it's about 3/4 women to men. Huh. So when you go to the National Storytelling Conference, there'll be 400 or 500 women and a couple hundred men.
Now, where is that usually held?
That particular conference moves every year.
Does it? Okay.
It's done by the National Storytelling Network, which is the membership organization.
I see. We have a couple of callers. Let's go to someone from Champaign, Illinois, on line number one. Go right ahead.
Hi,
yes.
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Yeah, Dan, it's Jim Katowski. I don't know if you remember me.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
I never did take one of your workshops, so I'm curious about what you said about not memorizing stories and knowing rather than memorizing, knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like a better idea of exactly what you mean by that and how one goes about that.
Sure. Well, Jim, what I mean by that is if you memorize something word for word, you're kind of caught in a trap.
Yeah, I know. I've been stuck in that. I've told stories and lost my thread, and
exactly. So what I do is I learn the story by saying it over and over again, and then trying it out and purposely thinking to myself, this time when I tell it, I'm going to make it shorter. This time when I tell it, I'm going to make it longer. This time when I tell it, I'm going to do this or this. And I purposely do that when I'm learning a story so that I break out of the mold of memorization. And so I can actually improvise the story if I have to. And so people will come up to me and say, I've heard that you tell that story 10 times and you've never told it the same way. Well, that's because I avoid that trap. And by just knowing it, just like you know your name, you know, eventually you know where you live when you move. You don't have to really sit there and memorize it. You know it, and that's what you do with the story. You learn. The only thing I ever memorize are the key phrases, and sometimes some stories don't even have any.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That makes a lot of sense.
Great, great. Thanks for the call, Jim.
Okay, bye.
And another call on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead with our guest, Dan Keating.
From Urbana?
Yes.
Yes, I'm on the phone, and I heard earlier in the program that our guest wanted to know a story from every country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something like 200 countries. I'm curious to know how far he has attained the goal of one story from a country.
I'm up to about 130
wow.
countries, but my repertoire of stories is about 450. Because, like I said, I get stuck on a country, and I like it so much that I'll learn more than I should.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for the call. Dan, as you think about these stories and decide to publish some of them, how do you decide if what version to publish? You have short versions, you have long versions, mm-hmm. You react to an audience, and who has copyright?
Well, since all the material that I've published so far as my books, have been traditional, so there is no copyright. They're in public domain.
Okay.
What I have to do for the traditional stories, that, let's say the ones I learned from my grandmother, is they were told to me to be told. So there's very little, how can I put it? There's very little explanation. For example, when you write a murder mystery, you have to describe your characters. You know, he was tall, he was slender, he was short, he was heavy, he was dark-skinned, he was light-skinned, he had white hair. But when you're telling a story, you don't want to do that. For example, when I told the first story about a little girl, I didn't say what she looked like at all. When I told the story about the farmer, he had no idea what he looked like. I described his bad luck because his description had to fit into that aspect of being a bad luck. There was no description to any of the characters because I want the audience to see them in their own imaginations. Once I can hook an audience into seeing the characters and the landscape in their own imaginations, then we're creating that story together, which makes storytelling a co-creative art form between the artist and the audience. So it's really important to take out those adverbs and adjectives and descriptions. But when I put them in a book, I have to put them back in. So I wind up rewriting the stories so they will be... because I'm not there to lead the audience. I lead the audience with my face, with my hands, with my voice, and I get them to see it. But if I'm not there, they're going to have some guidance. So the books have stories that are a little bit rewritten so that people have some guidance in the story.
Now, you did CDs of your storytelling before you did DVDs, I think.
Oh, sure.
If I understood your biography correctly. What difference did it make when suddenly the visual was included on something in a recording?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. The first time that I sat down and looked at it and said, oh, look at that. They're seeing my hands. They're seeing my face.
Uh-huh.
It was really exciting to see that. And I think we have to go a lot farther in storytelling to really get the DVDs down. Too many of us are still doing live ones when the camera's too far away. And also it disengages the home audience. But I think we're getting better and better at it.
Okay.
But it's really nice for someone to be able to see the whole package, not just hear the voice, but see the face, the body movement, the hands. Because you can tell right now I'm constantly hitting the desk and the microphone with my hands are moving.
I've had people be surprised when they first met me because they maybe have listened to this program for several times or several years. And when they finally meet me and see what I look like, they say, well, that's not at all the way I pictured you from your voice. And I do have a bit of a surprising appearance, I'll admit. But I wonder if the imagination of the listener over, say, a medium like radio might not make you better.
Well, sometimes people come up to me who have bought my CDs and have never seen me in person, and they'll say, you don't look anything like I imagined. Uh-huh. And then I go, what did you imagine? Uh-huh. They never tell me.
That's right. It's that image somehow that goes with the voice.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Let me give the phone numbers again. We're down to our last 10 minutes or so, but if you have a comment or question for our guest, Dan Keating, punch in 333-9455 if you're in Champaign-Urbana. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And let me repeat again that we realize that because of the weather, there may have been static on the air. You may have missed part of this program or part of one of these wonderful stories. If you have access to a computer, do go to will.illinois.edu/am. And you'll see Keeping the Faith and the programs there, or you can put in Dan Keating's name in the little search box, K-E-D-I-N-G. And this whole program will be archived there in about a week, as well as all previous programs for the last several years. So if you missed part of this program, that's one way you can listen at your convenience. And, of course, these programs are broadcast and people are perhaps listening live, who knows around the world, who knows where around the world even now. It's a wonderful time we live in.
It's amazing.
Do you feel good about being a storyteller, this ancient art, this oral tradition, the way of passing on information and wisdom and viewpoints at this time in world history?
Oh, I think it's an exciting time to be a storyteller because I find that my audiences crave this personal art form more than ever. I think the more technologically advanced we become, the more we crave the simplicity that storytelling gives us, that one-on-one with a storyteller. I've had people come up to me, when I've had 1,000 people in the audience, and they'll say, I just felt like you were talking to me. And that's not just me, it's storytelling. That's the art form that does that. It really is.
For listeners who may have tuned in later, let's remind them that dankeating.com is one place to go to find CDs and DVDs and books. All those things are also available, of course, online and in bookstores. Dan, would you tell us another story?
I'd like to, yes. I'll tell you a story that I wrote. And this is a short little story, and I usually end my concerts with it. I was up at the Arthur Morrow Center for Peace and Justice at the University of Manitoba last year and did some workshops and concerts there for the Winnipeg International Storytelling Festival. And I was really taken how they're using storytelling in conflict issues and resolution issues. And I was really enamored with what they were doing. And I wrote this story many, many years before, but I hope that people are telling it. It's really unusual because I write in a very traditional vein, so oftentimes I hear recordings of my own stories by other people, and then it'll say traditional after the story. I take that as a compliment. It would be nice to get the royalties, but I take it as a compliment. Once a long time ago, there was a war, and in this war there was a battle where two armies came together, and they fought from the time the sun came up until it began to set in the west. And at the end of the day, there were only two warriors left, two enemies, covered in the blood and the gore of battle. They were so weak, they were so tired, they could barely lift their swords to strike each other, till one man raised his shield and said, "It does us no honor to continue fighting. I say we should sleep here on the battlefield, and tomorrow, when the sun comes up again, we'll finish this battle, and only one of us will go home." And the other warrior agreed. And so they sheathed their great swords, They unbuckled their shields, took off their dented helmets, and they lay down among their dead comrades. But they were so weary, the weariness that comes with too much death, that neither man could sleep. And finally, in the darkness, one of them spoke. "Back in my village, I have a son, and he plays the wooden sword, and he says that he wants to grow up and be a warrior like me." And the other man listened. And then he said, "Back in my village, I have a daughter. And sometimes when I sing her to sleep, I look into her eyes and I see the youth of my wife." And the two men started to tell each other stories. Stories of their families, their villages, their people, the stories they learned when they were children at their grandparents' knees. They told each other stories all night. And then they saw the sun coming up in the east. And they stood, and they put on their helmets, and they strapped on their shields, and they pulled out their swords, now brown with the dried blood of yesterday's slaughter. And the two warriors stared deep into each other's eyes. And without a word, they sheathed their swords, they turned their backs on each other, and both men walked home. My grandmother always told me, you can never hate someone once you've heard their stories.
A story told by Dan Keating, K-E-D-I-N-G, our guest today on Keeping the Faith. Dan teaches at the University of Illinois storytelling and does this professionally. It has been, received many awards over the years. Dan, your stories have also been collected by other folks. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, people will, they'll come up with books that, and they'll get in touch with me and they'll say, oh, well, I'm doing a book. One of them was Allison Cox. I've known Allison for years, and she was doing a book called, let's see, I have it written here, Healing Heart. And it's a two-volume set, one, The Healing Heart, Stories to Heal the Family, and the other one, To Heal the Community. And so she put the first one, the two warriors, into the family one, and then another one I wrote, The Tear, a much longer story. She put that in the community one, and she, so people have come up to me and asked me for stories that I tell, both traditional and original, and I'm happy to share those. I like that the stories get around.
And Stories and Songs of Simple Living.
That's another book, and The Tear is also in that one, and that was another really interesting project. They also came out with a CD that came along with that. And so we were all on the CD telling stories or singing songs.
What happens at a storytelling festival? I've never been to one.
Oh, you should go to one. They're just great fun. Usually they start with what we call an oleo. An oleo is all the storytellers get together, and they all tell a small story, 5 to 6 minutes. And then from there, the next day, there'll be concerts, and you get to hear people first, so now you can say, oh, I want to see her, or I want to see him, and you go visit them, and the next day you get to hear them. And there's workshops usually, and how to tell stories, and how to be more effective as a storyteller. They're great fun.
Do families go to storytelling festivals?
Oh, yes.
How much does it cost?
Well, it depends on the festival. As cheap as $5, as much as $200. It depends on the festival. Uh-huh. The big festivals are the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, and the Timpanogos Festival in Orem, Utah. Those are the real, as far as number of people that attend, those are the two big ones.
And when do those happen?
One happens just before Labor Day. That's the one in Utah. And the National Festival always happens the first full weekend in October. And it's a picturesque town. It used to be the capital of Franklin, which was a state before Tennessee. It lasted for 6 months. The state of Franklin. Wow. And Jonesboro was the capital. And I'm gonna be performing this Thursday at 2:00 at the Champaign Public Library, doing a storytelling thing for children.
So if people would like to actually see Dan in action, that's tell us again, Tuesday at 2:00.
Thursday at 2:00, and then next Tuesday, June 22nd, I'll be at La Gourmandais with Kathy Brinkman, and we'll be doing a 2-hour show in the evening,
and
6
that's
to
in
8.
Champaign, Urbana.
That's in Urbana.
Urbana
on Main Street.
Okay.
And then there's an open mic, too, and you should come.
Tell a story.
People can come in, sign up, and they can get up and tell a story. And I think it would be wonderful to see you there.
And if people would like to see you other times, they may go to your website,
yes,
where you list when your various performances will be, and that's Dan Keating, K-E-D-I-N-G, .com. And you can also find information there about his various books and CDs and DVDs. Well, again, we've had a busy day with many weather announcements, and we'll be having others soon. Dan, you have one final short story.
Sure. I'll tell you a really little one.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites. Once there was a Buddhist monk, a Zen Buddhist monk, and one day a samurai came into his room. And he looked down at the old man and he said, "Teach me about heaven and hell." And the old man looked up and he saw a man that was seldom denied what he asked for. By the tone of his voice, the old monk did not like what he saw or heard. And he said, "Teach you? I could never teach you anything. You're ignorant. You're a stupid man. You smell. You haven't washed. There's probably rust on your sword." Well, the samurai was so enraged that he pulled out his long sword, held it over his head, and was just about to kill the old man. The samurai's face was flushed and red with anger. And the old man looked up and said, "That's hell." And the samurai stopped, realizing that this man had just risked his life to teach him a lesson. And he sheathed his sword, and a smile came across his face. And the old man looked up and smiled back and said, "That's heaven."
Another story by Dan Keating here on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Next week, we'll be talking with two students who are representing the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, a Muslim group here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I want to thank our guest today, Dan, for being so flexible, and for listeners who stuck with their radio in spite of static and other problems from the storm. But we got a lot of stories in, and again, if you missed any of it, go to will.illinois.edu to hear the archive that'll be there in just about a week. Thank you again, Dan.
Thank you, Steve.
Appreciated you being here today. And now we'll get some more weather information, very up-to-date, from Jeff Bossard. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.